The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This week on the Retirement and IRA Show.edu, we're going to dive deep into the ways that you split an IRA in divorce. Hi, my name's Chris Stein. This is the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition or education edition, where we don't answer email questions specifically, don't take any live calls, but we try to educate our listeners on particular topics. And unfortunately, splitting up assets in divorce is something that comes up for a lot of people. And there's a lot of misunderstandings about how to split up an IRA in divorce. So since we run across this all the time, mistakes made by people or confusion on this topic, we thought this might be a good one to handle today. So good afternoon, Jim.
Is my mic on?
It is. Would you like your headphones to be louder?
I can't hear me.
You can't hear you? That's a tragedy.
Well, I got to hear myself.
How about now?
Testing. A little better. Yeah, much better. I can hear myself now.
Perfect. Okay.
How come I could hear me before?
I'm not sure. Probably the weather.
Interesting. But welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU. It's when we dive deep into a certain topic. I got this idea from the Ed Slot Group. Ed came out with a recent study showing that the divorce rate for adults over the age of 50, and this is where Mark Twain's There's Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics quote really comes a little into play. The divorce rate for couples over the age of 50 is up 109% since 1990. Now, that sounds ominous, especially with the divorce rate for people 25 to 39 is down 21% in that same time period.
Interesting.
And the divorce rate for people between the age of 40 and 49 is up only 14%.
Let me predict why. Back in 1990, those over the age of 50 were kind of old school, and many of them just flat didn't believe in divorce. Now, if we fast forward some back in 1990, you said, so 28 years later, the social stigma on divorce has changed, and the generation that's now over 50 in 2018 views it a little differently, and there's a higher rate. Is that...
It is, but there's some misconceptions here, and I'm not going to dispute this number that Ed is providing. But what, as I read through here, they looked at, not they being Ed Slot, but his statistic looked at number of people per 1,000 divorcing within this age group. Mm-hmm. So for people over the age of, let's look at the first group rather, people between 25 and 39, there are 24 people per 1,000 divorcing nowadays, down from 30.
Yeah.
And for people between 40 and 49, there are 21 people per 1,000 divorcing, up from 18. But in people 50 and plus, there are 10 people divorcing per 1,000, up from 5. So it's still few people, but it's over 100% increase.
Yeah. That's
So when you say, oh, it's up 100%, well, there's now 10 people, which is still less than 21
and 24. I still stand by my reasons for going from 5 to 10. I might be wrong, but that's my gut reaction to that.
Well, the reason I wanted to do this show for those 10 people, if there's we've got 8,000 people who listen weekly to our podcast.
Is that all?
So that means 80 of them
are facing this.
Are going to be
over
divorced
50,
by
divorced
the end of the
and
year.
Probably have a retirement account.
Exactly.
That is going to need to be will be affected by this divorce.
So there's 80 people who may need us or at least this information per year.
So are you telling the other 7,920 of them to tune out?
Oh, they can stay on because they'll be in that 81 of these days. Okay. You know what the number one cause of divorce is too, though, don't you?
Marriage.
Marriage, exactly.
Yeah.
So usually when people say to me, because it comes up all the time, being like George Clooney's double, they wonder how I am not with a woman and married. Mm-hmm. So I often say, I prefer to say I've never been divorced. And that usually makes people go, oh, okay.
It's a little, still a little bit sad.
That I've never been divorced?
Just the whole situation.
Well, you've been divorced, have you not?
I have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not currently divorced. I'm currently married.
No, well, I would hope
happily.
Not. Happily. And mm-hmm. I hope it stays that way.
Me too.
Yes. If not, listen to this show because you'll know how to separate.
True. I hope to never need the information on this show.
So anyways, Ed came out with this statistic and decided to teach us or reiterate to us how not or how to split an IRA in divorce mm-hmm. by highlighting to us how not
right.
to split an IRA in divorce. So he takes a recent U.S. tax court case and walks everyone through that tax court case. And I thought I will share this with our listeners on how not to do it. Guy was trying to be nice, but mm-hmm. got the short end of a long stick. And what I want to do is explain how the mistakes were made, and then what do you have to do to split an IRA in divorce. So this is a tax court case. We can use their real name because it's a public record. It's a tax court case, but I don't think we should drag these people
through.
How about
just their first names?
All right, Jeremy and Katie.
Okay.
Carrie. Jeremy and Carrie. K-A-R-I-E. Mm-hmm. Carrie?
Yeah.
Okay. So they decided to divorce, and they wanted to do it the least expensive way possible.
Mm.
So they decided not to include lawyers.
Which sometimes works.
Sometimes works. I've seen mistakes made even with lawyers, so hiring a lawyer isn't necessarily going to help you with a retirement account. So they, on their own, they put together their own agreement covering how they would handle custody of their four children and divide all their property.
Hmm.
And in 2013, Jeremy files for divorce. So they agreed on everything and put it all together themselves and mm-hmm. then filed for their divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jeremy is the one who had an IRA, and he wanted to give half of it to Carrie. Carrie never worked while they were married, and she had debts. So Jeremy wanted to help her, so he agreed to split the IRA, and he did so before the courts signed off on the divorce agreement. So the courts had not blessed this separation yet. But the agreement specified that they agreed to and put in writing. They agreed that Carrie would get half of the IRA mm-hmm. to pay her debts. So in late April 2013, Jeremy closed his entire IRA. You see, he wanted not only to give Carrie half,
mm-hmm.
he wanted the other half for himself.
Hmm. So he wanted the money out of it.
Yeah, he wanted the money out of it.
Which you can do.
Yep.
Some people think you can't get it. You can get it. Just a matter of the penalties and taxes involved.
And there wasn't much money involved here.
Oh.
$34,700.
Well, it's not an insane amount.
It's not an insane amount.
No. That was the total or each half?
Nope, that was the total.
Total, okay. So he closes it, takes out the $34,000.
Gives
Carrie 17.
Gives Carrie $17,378.
Well, that's precise. Okay. We'll call
this
it 17.
This is a court case. We'll call it 17.
Yeah.
He keeps the other 17.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next day, Carrie pays off her car loan.
Hmm.
And puts $71 in her checking account.
That's all that's left?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know what the rush to pay off the car was. Maybe high interest rates?
She didn't want to have a payment anymore. She's got this big payout, 17 grand. Wipe out the debt, feels kind of good.
Now remember, this was mm-hmm. April of 2013.
Yes.
In June of 2013,
mm-hmm. I'm taking notes because I haven't heard this story before.
No, you have not. The courts sign off on the final divorce decree.
Oh, gee.
Agreeing to the terms set forth in the original filings submitted to the court. So the court signed off on everything that Carrie and
Jeremy,
thank you, agreed to.
Mm-hmm. That's encouraging.
However, what was the mistake? So far, besides getting married, was the mistake?
At this point, Jeremy has incurred a tax bill for the entire distribution of that $34,000, and that all belongs to him. Because when he distributed it, it was all still his IRA.
Right. It was the timing of everything and the mechanism of splitting it. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yep.
Okay. So in 2013, Jeremy files his taxes and he paid the income taxes on the distribution.
On just his, though. It's on his 17.
But he did not pay the 10% penalty tax.
Oh.
So all's what it says here is Jeremy filed his taxes and paid the income taxes due on the IRA distribution. I don't know if he will read on.
Okay.
Well, the IRS gets a hold of him a couple years later and says he owed the 10% penalty. Mm-hmm.
Which would be $3,400.
The IRS isn't saying taxes. So I'm guessing he paid all the taxes, which would be mighty nice of him.
Depends. Maybe some of that debt that Carrie had was kind of joint. Maybe it was their joint car or something like that. Who knows the rest of the story? We don't know.
We don't know.
So we're not judging on whether Jeremy was nice or not.
Okay.
Maybe it was perfectly fair.
Jeremy conceded that he owed the 10% penalty on his half of the IRA distribution. He argued to the court, and he represented himself. He went pro se.
He should have learned his lesson on the divorce decree, bro say.
So he went to the court alone. I could have saved the money if he would have just called me. I would have told him that he muffed up. Save your time and effort going to court. But he represented himself. And he said that Carrie was an alternate payee. And he argued he should not be held liable for the portion that went to her. He said that the distribution was made pursuant to a qualified domestic relation order. So you can tell he's representing himself.
Because he looked up some stuff on the internet.
He did.
And didn't quite
understand
all the details correct.
That an IRA, and we'll talk about this in a second, has nothing to do with a qualified domestic relation order.
Right.
Okay. So, unfortunately for Jerry, the court sided entirely with the IRS.
Yep.
Okay.
So now Jeremy's out his work and effort and costs, probably, in addition to the full $3,400.
Yep. The court agreed with the IRS and stated Jeremy did not qualify for the exception to the 10% penalty for two reasons. First, the IRA was distribution was made directly to Jeremy and not to Carrie.
Right.
And second, he received a check and deposited it into a bank account. He then gave Carrie half the proceeds. Second, there was no court order of any kind ordering this. He did it before the court order. So he made the distribution out directly to himself and not to Carrie. And actually wouldn't have went well if Carrie wanted to keep it in an IRA, it wouldn't have been made out to Carrie. It would have been made out to her IRA. Mm-hmm. If Carrie wanted to take it as a distribution, that would be different. And a quadro does not apply. Qualified domestic relation order, the court ruled. Neither one of those two court rulings surprised me at all. What you have to understand, folks, is first of all, as Chris said, and you're probably right, Chris, Jeremy gets on the internet and starts Googling probably separating retirement accounts in divorce or something like that. Yep. And he probably started seeing the word QDRO. I say the word because we pronounce it quadro. I don't know how it got that.
It's an acronym.
Quadro would have been more accurate.
That sounds
quadro.
Too much like Cujo. So.
QDRO.
Stephen King in there.
Q is for qualified, D is domestic, R is relation, O is order. qualified domestic relations order. Mm-hmm. We talked about those in the past. You need a quadro to break up an employer plan.
Right.
A 401k or other ERISA-protected plan breaks up by a quadro, and the court is involved, and the court signs off. We talked on the past how a quadro really starts out as a DRO, domestic relation order. It's not qualified yet. So you write the DRO, and you use the form of the 401k. You write this DRO, this domestic relation order, and you submit it to the court.
Right.
The court will bless it, and when it does, it qualifies it, and it becomes a quadro.
Right. So essentially, these employer plans are putting it on the court system to make the decisions on what the split, whether it should be split or not. They're not going to take your word. They're not going to take some agreement. The court itself, essentially, these plans protect themselves. They cover their behinds, if you will, by only responding to splits of these accounts from a court order. And that court order specifically is the quadro that Jim's talking about.
A IRA, similar, but different. You don't use a quadro or a DRO. You use a divorce decree. And it started out right. They sat there together, probably at the kitchen table, talking this out. Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Kate. Yeah, we're not getting along.
Carrie.
We're not getting along anymore. And
they get along pretty well if they put this together on their own.
They did. You know, hey, let's dissolve this marriage. And they agree that Carrie will get half the IRA. And they put that in writing in an agreement and submit it to the court in April, April 3rd, as a matter of fact, when they filed for their divorce. Jeremy is the one who went down to court. I didn't read the entire description. Jeremy is the one who went down there, filed, and submitted the agreement. Here's our agreement. This is what we want to do. And they didn't do it with an attorney. And I don't know if an attorney would have helped here or not. Maybe they would have. And everything looked fine except Jeremy closes the IRA before the court sanctioned it. Even though the court agreed to everything in the agreement and said, yeah, that's fine. The fact that he separated the IRA, that disqualified because he did it before the court agreement. But let's play devil's advocate, Chris. Let's say Jeremy didn't jump the gun. He told Carrie, hey, wait on paying off your car. We got to wait for the courts to get through this.
Yep.
So he waited until June. The court signs off on it, agrees to it, blesses, if you will, their agreement, makes it a divorce decree, and says, move forth and prosper. Right.
And if he took the same actions, he still did it wrong.
Exactly.
Still did it wrong because he distributed it all to himself.
Exactly. So what you do with the court order is Carrie, right?
Carrie, yes. Yeah.
Carrie would have went to a custodian and opened an IRA in her name and moved Jeremy's IRA into her IRA.
Sent the divorce decree to the custodian of Jeremy's IRA.
Exactly. And the receiving custodian is probably going to want to see a copy of it. And the custodians will release the money and transfer it. We call that a trustee-to-trustee transfer because Carrie's not touching the money. Jeremy's not touching the money. But that's not what they did, obviously. But even if they had the court order and Jeremy did the same thing, closes the IRA and gives half to Carrie, it's still fully taxable to Jeremy and fully subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Because they were under the age of 59 and a half, it's all on Jeremy's shoulder, not Carrie's. So you have to be very careful if you're separating an IRA and divorce because you control that IRA and it seems real easy. Hey, let's just close this now. Why wait?
Yeah, and split it up now.
And split it up now as they did. Hey, I want to pay this car off and I want that $71 put in my checking account. And okay, yeah, let's do this now. The problem is they didn't do it as a direct transfer. What I would do, folks, if I was the one married and I don't know if I'll ever get married. I often joke that way. You can see why I don't impress the women all the time when I make my married jokes. But one of these days I'll get married, just to prove all you naysayers wrong.
Really? You're taking it as a challenge? You're going to do it? Just those are all the right reasons, Jim, to get married. Just to prove others wrong. That's the right approach.
But if you are married and you're going to separate the IRA, and even with the divorce decree, do it as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. Transfer the IRA to the other spouse. Now, if that other spouse, if he would have done it that way, if he would have waited for the divorce decree and then transferred the money, when Carrie removed it, she would have been hit with the tax bill. She would have been hit with the 10% early withdrawal penalty.
Right. So she would have ended up with a lot less money than she ended up with.
Yeah, she
wouldn't have gotten this. She got extra. And maybe that was somewhat the intent. He only argued about the penalty. He didn't argue about the taxes themselves. So somehow he either just decided that was he was going to eat that part, or maybe there was a special tax situation. Maybe that was intentional, but he completely forgot about the ramifications of the penalty and thus argued unsuccessfully in front of the tax court. And he didn't pay a lawyer, but he ended up paying a lot of money because of the mistakes. Hopefully a lawyer would have helped him not make these. Or even if, you know, something like that with retirement accounts, this could be clarified by a competent financial advisor or financial planner that knows a lot about how these retirement accounts work and how they should be handled in a divorce situation. So you don't necessarily have to hire a lawyer specifically to answer this one particular question. Certainly you do for more complicated legal matters. But this retirement issue is actually something that I found is confused by attorneys even sometimes. They think the quadro is the ultimate document that does everything. And in fact, it does not.
One of the things I want to point out that Ed points out to us all the time on splitting anything, a quadro or a divorce decree. So if you're splitting an employer retirement account, a ERISA-sponsored employer plan, or an IRA, is a lot of times both documents will address based on dollars. Yet the value of those accounts fluctuate. Mm-hmm. And it could hurt or help the 401k or IRA owner who is being forced to split it. If, let's just say, each of them had agreed to $17,000 in this example, and the $34,000 IRA tanked while they were waiting for the divorce decree, to be approved by the courts, if it said she's to get $17,000, and not she's to get half of his account balance, whatever it may be, and it now is no longer worth 34, it's now worth 20, he's on the hook for giving her 17.
Right, so he gets 3 and she gets 17.
And if there's less and she wants to be a real pain, hey, you agreed to give me 17. Mm-hmm. There's only 15 in here. You still owe me $2,000.
Yep.
So you need to specify if you are splitting the accounts based on percentages, you get half, I get half. You get 30, I get 70. You get 70, I get 30. Or are you splitting it on a dollar value? And Ed strongly recommends that the divorce decree or quadro, if you're splitting an ERISA plan, should specify what date the valuation will be made. Is it a past date and you're going to base it on that? Is it going to be the date perhaps that the quadro or the divorce decree is approved? But you should specify the date, if you are, especially as Ed says, if you are giving dollars, not percents. If you're giving a percent, then it's almost a moot point. You get half, I get half of whatever it's worth on the day we split it. But if not, if you're specifying a dollar amount, well, what day are you going to value the account at? Or if you're specifying a dollar amount, you best get that account split as soon as you can, because you're responsible for any losses that may happen if you're specifying a hot and fast dollar amount. So that was something that I had never thought of before until listening when we went to the presentation, and Ed recently wrote about this also in some publications. But the final thing that Ed wants to point out is, who pays for the cost of doing any of this, if there's any cost? Are you going to be splitting the cost, or is one party paying the cost and the other isn't? And then finally, especially on the recipient, if you're trying to equalize a balance and you have a choice of getting 50%, 70%, 100% of an IRA or a 401k, or 50%, 70%, or 100% of a non-retirement account, there's a huge difference between the two, taxes. So if someone is trying to equalize the estate and says to you, oh, hey, I'm going to keep the $500,000 home, and I'm going to give you $500,000 from the 401k, that's not a fair trade. Because the $500,000 in the 401k, when you receive it, will be subject to taxes. The home could very well escape taxation because of the $250,000 single person, $500,000 capital gain exemption that whoever receives the house is going to be eligible for. So some of the other things to keep in mind are the taxation issues and the valuation issues, and are you promising flat dollars or percents? From what we read on Jeremy and Carrie's situation, they had agreed on a percent. You get half of the account balance, I get half of the account balance. But what about all the other issues, especially if you are going to agree not to just say half, but here you're going to get this hard and fast dollar amount? So keep those things in mind as you go through this. And that's all we wanted to cover on today's EDU show, is a little bit about separating IRAs and divorce. And don't get confused between a quadro, which is designed to break a employer-sponsored ERISA-style plan, with a divorce decree, which is how you split an IRA. And just because you have the decree doesn't mean you can just go take out the money and go give it to your ex. You got to transfer it trustee to trustee, or you will still be subject to the taxes and 10% early withdrawal penalty, irrespective of having a divorce decree.
Perfect.
All right.
Well, thanks for joining us here on the Retirement IRA Show EDU.
I was going to say, make sure you mention about how to get a hold of us.
That's where I'm headed right here.
I didn't realize that.
No problem. So if you're interested in contacting us, we are living, breathing financial planners here in the state of Colorado, but we help people from all over the country. And we can interact with you either face-to-face or over this fabulous new invention called the internet, or even the old-fashioned telephone. We can answer your questions, help you out with most of your retirement planning situations. So the way you contact us, twofold. There's the direct phone call method, 970-530-0556. Or you can find out a lot more about us and connect with us via our website, which is found at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you can contact us through our contact form or learn more about us and find the phone number to call us on that website as well. So we invite you to do one of those two things, jimhelps.com, or call us, 970-530-0556. Our first consultation meeting with you is free of charge. We call it a coffee and a second opinion, where we sit down either virtually over the phone or internet or face-to-face and talk to you about your financial situation and what's your view for yourself in retirement and your plans might be, and can talk to you about how we might be able to help you. And if we find some areas where we can't help you, we'll try to refer you to where you can get the help that you're looking for. So anything you want to add, Jim?
No, that's about it. Except we will see you next week on the Retirement and IRA Show EDU version. Remember, this one comes out on Wednesday. Don't forget about our Saturday version of the Retirement and IRA Show, which we affectionately call the Q&A Show for question and answer. That's where we answer all your email questions. Even if you don't want to schedule a coffee and a second opinion, don't hesitate to email us a question. You can simply visit our website, Jim Helps. That's jimhelps.com. Click on the Contact Us button. Or if you want to send us an email direct, simply send it to jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Tell us what your question is, and we'll answer it on the Q&A show.
Perfect. So we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.